Last night, Kurt Creighton got exactly what they wanted off a 10-day layoff. DePaul showed up, challenged him early, and Creighton settled in, ran away 77-53. The game was not as close as the score might indicate. And now Creighton winners are four in a row. They head on the road. They play Xavier this weekend in Cincinnati as we welcome in Brody Darren, who joins us every Thursday to talk Jays and college basketball. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Howdy, Gary. Doing well, sir. Thank you.
Hey, before we dive into last night and what is ahead and some other college basketball chatter, we had this discussion yesterday, and I'm still trying to figure out where it came from, but it morphed into NBA discussion about guys that played in the Jordan era and the Lakers and the Celtics, if they'd be able to play in today's era and vice versa. You know how we all play that fantasy basketball. But I was thinking of something when it comes to Jordan and being able to play in this era. He grew up where there was no three-point line until he got to the NBA. Again, you know, one of his most iconic shots, there's no three-point line on the floor. Can you even recall the last time you went into a gym and there was not a three-point line? And if you went into a gym when your younger days and your playing days and there wasn't a three-point line on the floor, how you would react?
Well, I had that experience because as a kid growing up in small town Iowa, there were some old gyms in the vicinity where you could go, and there were gyms that didn't have the three-point line painted on them. So that was something I did experience. But and today that would be, that'd be really difficult to comprehend. However, I'd actually be a big supporter of it, because you look at youth basketball, you know, there's a lot of kids that are just chucking up shots behind a three-point line because it's there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the skill set could be developed better, particularly at that foundational early age, fifth, sixth grade. I don't know what the right timeline was, but if there was no such thing as a three-point shot for those kids, because you just have to develop the right mechanics and let your body grow into it so that you're shooting, you know, things with the right form and mechanics. And usually when you're in fourth, fifth, sixth grade, you're not strong enough to shoot the same shot from 20 feet as you are from 10. Great point on Jordan. And I could spend hours with you talking about the generational debates, those and the merits of them.
So would he score 60 in today's NBA?
I think he could. I mean, his playoff average was 33 in an era that was way more physical and way lower scoring. I mean, even though The Last Dance was a great replay and reminder of the fact that they held Utah to 52 points in the one playoff game?
Yep.
And, you know, they're winning the NBA championship games like 87-82. I mean, today, you know, those are 125-plus type of games, generally speaking. So, yeah, it is very feasible to consider him going to get 45, on a given night.
So, you know, these are the fun debates that we have as basketball fans of different eras. And it's, for the most part, it's not fair at all to compare guys across different eras. But if you see some ingredients that it doesn't matter what era they play in, they can play, whether it be in the physical part of the 80s NBA or the way the game is played today, what are some of the ingredients that you think doesn't matter when you're playing basketball, you're going to be successful?
Well, I mean, Jordan is the penultimate reflection of it, but it's just the competitiveness. It doesn't matter what the constraints are put on you from one era versus the other, but you know, there's never been a player more competitive in the NBA, and arguably an athlete more competitive than Michael Jordan. I mean, there's only very few people that would come close to that. Kobe Bryant probably being another one. You know, Tiger Woods and his sport being another one. But those guys are in such an elite company there. So now I just transcended sports with that. But I don't. You know, whether it's today's NBA or the 80s NBA or the 60s NBA, that mental toughness and level of competitiveness would transcend any of those eras.
It's a fun exercise. We were comparing teams as well. Could the Celtics and the Lakers, Showtime Lakers, what would they be like playing today? We already took out the bad boys because most of those guys would foul out in the first 7 minutes of today's NBA.
Yeah, I think the Showtime would have a better chance. There's a lot of, obviously, they got up and down the floor and they scored a bunch of points and they were skilled at a bunch of levels. But Yeah, it's so difficult because, you know, a lot of the Showtime era really was Sam's three-point shot. It would kind of split the three-point era at all, yeah. And it was at the very early elements of it. But, that's a fun discussion, Gary. We could go on for hours on that one.
We will save that. Last night, I know it was kind of like it was the best-case scenario for Creighton. They played DePaul, who was at the bottom of the Big East, but you don't overlook them. You're coming off a 10-day layoff. You're not exactly sure what you're going to get. You get DePaul come out and play really well in the first couple of minutes. They challenge you. You go, okay, we're back. We got our legs underneath of us. And then take off in the last 35 minutes or so. It would seem like that was exactly the kind of the way last night unfolded was perfect for Creighton coming off a 10-day layoff to get everybody involved as they did, whether you were starters or how well that bench played.
Agreed. I mean, you know, the schedule fell how it did, and it was serendipitous, I think, for Creighton. Not like you said, not knowing exactly what you'd get on the floor after that layoff, and you know, I felt like DePaul hit a few shots early that they probably wouldn't normally make. I mean, Romeo Weems threw in a couple, and there was a few shots that fell for him. So it was an 18-all ball game with 7:35 left in the first half. And then by that point, you know, Creighton had kind of all the pieces flowing in the right direction and you know, put it on DePaul the rest of the way. And we, you know, got the result that we did. So good test. You got a chance to, you know, get some younger guys some minutes or that second line group of guys some minutes. And that had been a big focus of the time off over the previous 10-day break there. So that was, you know, really beneficial to be able to apply some of that focus to this game. You know, Creighton, I felt like they got great shots the entire game. I mean, they only hit 33% or so of their 3-point shots, but I think they attempted 31. Every single one of those 31 were good shots. So, you know, offensively, I thought they moved the basketball really well. They turned it over a few times and some spots, particularly in the first half, trying to make some plays though. So I thought, yeah, like you, to your point, once they settled in, it was a good reflection of you know, getting back into a rhythm and keeping this momentum going.
DePaul will have they'll have nightmares of Christian Bishop last night. Charlie Moore will have nightmares of Reef guarding him all night long. But there's also a nightmare that they have if you look down the road. And Ryan Kalkbrenner, I thought last night was and you know, he's played a lot of key minutes as the season has unfolded. And he's still a freshman, and he's still growing, and he's still learning. But if you had to break down what he was like from his first half performance last night to his second half performance, what was the difference?
Yeah, I thought he was just a lot more assertive. You know, he was just being aggressive at trying to make plays sometimes. You know, I felt like he was trying to sort of settle in, understand what the defense was going to give him, was maybe a little bit more passive in the first half. You know, in the second half, it was just a matter of catch and go make a play, take advantage of the, you know, the skill set and the size advantage that he has. And, you know, he was the beneficiary of a couple of really good offensive basketball plays and extra passes made too by his teammates. But those are also made to a guy that's 7 foot and got great hands and super long and can make catches and plays that other guys can't for this Creighton basketball team. So, you know, but overall, to your point, what was the difference? I just thought it was his overall assertiveness.
What do you think his offseason is like?
Yeah, I think he and Jeremy spend a lot of time together in the weight room. But, you know, I don't look at him needing to put on like 40 pounds. You know, I think he's a guy that his agility and his footwork and his athleticism are some of his biggest skill sets. He needs to put some on and some strength. I think it's really more of a matter of strength than it is necessarily pounds. You know, I mean, he could probably stand another 15 to 20 pounds, but, you know, to be able to leverage what his strengths really are while bolstering those with a little bit more physical strength. So that's a big part of it. You know, obviously just continuing to focus on improvement in all of the areas, you know, handling the basketball, shooting it, But, you know, those are things that he has as strengths. I think it's continuing to develop a kind of a right shoulder move. He likes to come back with a left-handed jump hook on that side. I think maybe a little fadeaway there would be another good addition to that that low post move. But, I'm, as many are, you know, knock on wood, staying healthy, he's got all sorts of upside. And I'm really bullish on the future.
What does it do for that locker room, for that team, when you have games like last night where, and you're somebody who started nearly an entire career outside of a couple of games, that the starters do their job and they give way, and the guys that have put in the same exact time in practice and in game prep, they get rewarded with playing time, and it's not just garbage time. They got to play a extended amount of guys that are on the end of the bench or in the middle of the bench. What does that do inside of that locker room, or like today when you go back to practice, that everybody got a chance to play? And it wasn't just like 30 seconds here or a minute there. They got to play some key moments, and they got to, you know, enjoy their time on the floor instead of, oh, everybody's going for the exits and, you know, we got to get this game over.
Right. No, huge lift. Just emotionally for everybody there. And to your point, it is the guys, the walk-ons and the guys that get very limited time, but it's also the second-line guys that got, you know, double-digit minutes and got a chance to play extended minutes last night. And, you know, Alex O'Connell had a great game. I thought Sharif gave really good minutes. We've talked about Ryan Kalkbrenner. You know, I thought Antoine Jones actually played really good minutes. He was 0-for-4 from the field, but he had two assists, but made a couple of really good plays, I thought, and played well defensively. So, you know, good, solid minutes from that second-line crew. You get to see the floor more than some of those guys have had. I mean, there's been obviously times where Antoine's kind of been a liability on either end of the floor and hasn't played that great. And so, and you know, there's been games where Alex O'Connell's gotten maybe 4 to 6 minutes. So to get all of those guys a good look, and then of course, later in the game, the last 3 minutes or so, getting, you know, that walk-on crew that are the heart and soul of your team. And, you know, particularly at this point in the season, late in the conference season, and, you know, you very rarely get a chance to do something like that. Coming off a grinder of a last 11-day break and where you're only practicing and not playing, and you probably haven't even seen the floor for the last couple of months. Tons of fun, great lift, and you know, for the spirits and the overall attitude in the locker room.
Xavier Nova Butler to finish, and you get Xavier, who last night lost to Providence, never led in the game. They're they're still in a lot of brackets, but their back is against the wall, and now you got to take on Creighton and Cincinnati on Saturday. I'm going to read a quote from Travis Steele after the game, and he's pretty honest after games, especially after losses. It's almost a must-watch because he'll let it rip about his team. But this quote stands out, especially with who they are playing next. Our three-point percentage defense is abysmal. We're allowing guys to get way too comfortable, guys that can really shoot the ball. If that's an issue with your team this late in the year, and they've had, you know, they've had COVID has kind of messed with their season. But if you're saying that against Providence, and you know that Creighton's coming in to play on campus at Alumni Hall this weekend, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, well, you know where the focus in practice is going to be with that quote and knowing who's coming to town this weekend. And it's interesting, you know, you've seen Issa DePaul do it last night. All Creighton's had to do against that DePaul defense was swing the basketball and get it moving side to side one time, and then they could get whatever shots that they wanted. I mean, that's an overstatement, but they could get really, really clean looks. And part of that is the element of just over-helping, which is interesting because, you know, now you take back that, like, the Villanova and Creighton game where you had two clubs that could shoot the lights out of the ball, and both of the clubs decided that they were going to, you know, dig into gaps but not overhelp because you're really afraid of that inside-out open jump shot. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Travis Steele elects to play this great defense. But they've got they've got an athletic enough club that if they decide to guard, you know, straight up and try to employ the same strategy that sort of Villanova and Creighton did playing each other, you know, it'll be more difficult to get buckets. And then, you know, then you have to find different ways to work inside out. And, you know, the Ryan Kalkbrenner post-ups to provide relief by putting pressure on the rim, or those flip-ups like we saw against Villanova for Christian Bishop, putting pressure on the rim is the only way to loosen things up there. So you're right. They're a desperate basketball club. You know, they have more to lose than Creighton does. I think Creighton has a lot that they're still chasing, though. That's a hungry team that wants to go and put themselves in a position to maybe still win a regular season title, which is potentially within reach with these last three games. And this is a big one to start it off. You know, you got to take care of business there, and then handle, you know, two major road games that are going to be difficult to close out, because, you know, obviously the class of the league in Villanova and the Butler Bulldogs Hinkle Fieldhouse has been iron unkind every time Creighton visited there.
Brody, as always, I appreciate it. Thank you for the insight. Good job last night. I always enjoy you and John together, and we'll chat next week.
Sounds good.
It's Brody Derin from who joins John Bishop on the Jays broadcast. He joins us every Thursday. Like I said, Xavier and Alumni Hall. I think they're still at the Cintas Center for games in the pandemic season. But you have nine days left in the regular season. Nate Johnson, I saw him on the broadcast last night. He was in a walking boot. He's a starter for them. They still have Fremantle and they still have Scruggs. But they are searching right now for an identity. And they let Providence just freewheel out beyond the arc. That would not be a good thing on Saturday if they allow Creighton shooters just to hang outside of the arc and just shoot unimpeded. So that game is coming up late afternoon on Saturday. Again, if you're just tuning in, big news for Nebraska tonight. They'll go to Champaign. Kofi is still there. He has not gotten injured. But Io DeSumo is not going to play because of a broken nose. Illinois has described it as a facial injury. Don't know how long he'll be out in the running for the Big Ten Player of the Year, National Player of the Year, and somebody who saved Illinois. 2 weeks ago, Nebraska was going to pull a monster upset when we thought that there was no chance. No chance. And Nebraska almost did it until DeSumo took over at the end of the game and got the game to overtime and then scored the first 5 points in overtime. And you know the result. Illinois ended up winning by five. He's not playing tonight. He's affected the line. It went from 16.5 to about 12.5 for that 6 o'clock tip-off. All right, 118, we come back. George still got his NBA minute. We got to discuss the Jazz last night against the Lakers. People are ready to pass the torch for Celtics fans. Do you see an end in sight for the woeful Celtics right now?
Yeah, that's bad in Boston.
So something that we spoke of earlier about Indiana, Brad Stevens? He's always struck me as a NBA guy, even with his success at Butler. And he's had a fair amount of success in the NBA with the Celtics.
Oh, yeah.
But this is not good right now. Would Brad Stevens listen to a phone call from Indiana? Or is it completely off the table because the NBA season is so disjointed with their calendar that he would have to leave before they would be done?
Would he?
Uh-huh. So you would probably have an opening. You would want somebody there in April.
Yeah.
Celtics more than likely. They're still going to be, the Celtics would still be playing. Yeah. The NBA season would still be going on.
Yeah.
So if you were going to leave the NBA to go to college, you would have to leave before your season is over. I don't think Brad Stevens would do that. And the ownership there, I think Danny Ainge is more on the hot seat than Brad Stevens is.
Bingo.
The ownership thinks highly of Brad Stevens, but things aren't good for the Celtics right now. They've lost 4 of 5. They've lost, 14 of 21? I compare them to the Heat. Celtics started 8-3.
Yeah.
The Heat started 7-14. Today, they both have the same record.